Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a geography, it could be. Maybe it's men around me. No, you love this week in Mormons, regional Mormon news. If you love Lindsey Sterling, Bryce Harper in Utah, and Jell-O salad foods, oh, you're gonna love this show.
Hello, it's me.
Yes.
I was wondering if you know any guys that are named Pete to come over and do their thing. I don't know what Pete's thing would be. I felt like I kind of committed to that track before I was ready.
It happens. Usually you're pretty
Being
good.
Being a rapper is so hard. Do you ever feel this way? Like, well, when you're freestyling and you're like, wait, what am I doing? I just said orange. Nothing rhymes with orange.
Yeah, I do it all the time, but remember, I'm not a rapper. Remember that.
I'm not a rapper.
But my freestyle is the freest style of all the styles. Let me tell you.
I met a guy who like Jimmy the Mormon was in his mission or something.
Oh, yeah?
And I was like, he's a nice guy, huh? They're like, yeah. And I said, he takes this stuff pretty seriously, right? And they were like, yeah, he does.
I don't want to feel like we're denigrating one for taking the faith seriously, because it's a fine line, right? I think.
The faith. No, I mean rapping. Like, so here's the problem with any local band, any band. When they come from your hometown, you're always just like, no, that's just Jimmy. And then turns out they are the Oneaters.
Al, you wouldn't understand. You're not a musician.
That's what I'm saying. Like, completely. If you started playing, if you became wildly famous, I'd still be like, yeah, but he's kind of a wanker, that guy. He's not very good. I mean, did he do his Hit Me Baby One More Time jam that he loves? He always does that.
You've never seen me play that.
Oh, baby.
When have you ever seen me do my acoustic Baby One More Time?
Remember Halloween last year at the Ward party?
Yeah, you weren't there for that.
You don't know where I was, Jeff. Perform. I could have been anywhere.
It's just funny. By the way, everyone, this is This Week in Mormons. Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant to say. Hello from Peter. Doing those things, it's This Week in Mormons.
Yeah, so that's that.
Jeff gave me the intro to do This Week, and I really felt like I had it.
You crashed and burned pretty hard. This was like trying to land a rocket on one of those floating platforms for SpaceX.
This was the Kerbal Space Program.
Yeah.
Have you ever played the Kerbal Space Program?
I have not. I know that my brother plays it, actually.
Oh, it is brilliant.
I think I got it for him for
you
Christmas.
You build rocket ships and try and launch them. It's the most nerdy game you could possibly have because there is no winning. You just put more rockets into orbit and get them further out to different planets.
That sounds like fun to me.
Dude, you would actually kind of love it, I think.
At any point, do you go through a wormhole? Do you learn that love is something, is like the fourth dimension? Does any part of that happen?
No, you don't go to the fifth dimension in this, because then you show up in the Pearl of Great Price.
There are no tesseracts.
No. But you do, you can go to like, and they're not named the same planets. They want it to be a new thing, so like... You can go to like a Saturn-ish sort of place,
sure,
which is fun.
Sure,
we have a moon you could land on and colonize of sorts.
All they have to do is use more of the Greek gods. A lot of the planets are named after Roman gods, so just switch it to the Greek ones, and we're good.
Who are the Greek gods? Just Yanni. He's the only Greek god. Thank you, everybody.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
It's a funny one.
I'll give all credit where credit is due on that one. Who do we have here? Roman counterpart.
I'm staying with Yanni.
This is like Jupiter is Zeus, for example. Neptune would be Poseidon. Things like that, you know.
All right. No, they didn't. No, they didn't have a problem renaming the planets. I don't know what you're
doing. I'm just saying
right
it's an easy way to.
No, Jeff, they already renamed them. They named them Kerbal things.
Let's rename Venus Aphrodite.
Kerbals are little green guys that have their own naming conventions. It's like Elvish.
No. I believe you're describing the game Lemmings. What you appear to be describing is Lemmings. Or
Leo's
Fortune.
Jeff, I assume you spent your entire week reading the play of Harry Potter. Is that true?
I can only wish. No, but I have returned from. Our great friend to the north, Canada.
Oh, he's a friend now.
I'm a big. I like what they're doing up there.
He was a lover before, now just a friend.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what happens sometimes. You know, sometimes you prove that you can survive a relationship and still maintain professionalism. I am doing super. We had a wonderful time up there off of Vancouver Island for the week. You know, just fished. I boated. I enjoyed magnificent sunsets. I sat there on a deck just relaxing and enjoying the evening air as ferries plied the waters in the distance.
Your pictures looked great.
It was very, very pleasant.
Wait, so what was the point of this? You just Airbnb it up there? Like,
No. We have family that have a house up there.
Oh, so can I use it?
Maybe if you get in with them.
Yeah, no, I'll do anything.
Okay.
I can wear that.
You just can't trash the joint.
I also do not trash joints.
So anyways, that was lovely, delightful. The weather, just so many good things happening. And then we got to spend a little bit of time in Seattle over the weekend, one of my favorite cities. Big shout out to everybody in Seattle.
Did you go visit any Twim Nationers out in Seattle?
None of them came and said hello. I don't know what their problem is. It could be because people in Seattle don't have much faith.
If you live within 3 hours, just call Jeff and say, hey, come to me 3 hours away, and then I'll make fun of Jeff for not going and seeing them. This happens often as I travel. I'd like to return that favor.
Oh, this happened. They say they're 3 hours away. No, the one time was when somebody was in Brooklyn and you didn't want to go.
That's an hour train ride.
No, that's fair. I'm not. That's legit. I'm okay with it.
Might as well have been in New Jersey.
I mean, if I'm in Seattle and someone says, hey, I'm in Portland, come on down, I'm going to be like, no, that's not going to happen.
What if they're in Shmamamish?
Or Spokane or something? Or
No, like
Tri-Cities?
Redding, Shmamamish, or some...
You mean Snohomish County?
Shmamamish. Jeff, do not...
You are making up racist things that sound like Native American cities.
They are Native American cities. They are named by...
You are making these up.
No, there's a place, Shmamamish. I don't know how to do it.
This is the worst moment of your life right now. What are you doing?
It's not the worst for me. I've been much lower.
You got nowhere to go but up. So Seattle's Dynamite. Didn't see any Twim Nation. By happenstance, though, we stayed with some friends. Their ward is the same ward I visited when I happened to go to Seattle years ago, back when you lived with us, right?
No.
When
we were up there. No, same, you went... No.
Same exact ward. And what was memorable about this ward when I was there...
The conductor.
Years ago, the conductor. Sadly, the conductor has been released, and he's getting older now, so he's just kind of hanging out. I was bummed about that because I was really looking forward to the conductor. But what a great ward. So Woodland Park Ward, big shout out. Did great stuff. Something I loved about him, really loved this. Their bishop's a graphic designer. And of course he is. Because it's in it, like most, a lot of the tech companies are headquartered in the ward boundaries.
Yeah.
So you got Amazon, the Google campus is there. They're all in those ward boundaries. So you got a lot of tech.
Wait, I like where this is going. What was this jam?
No, this was just a good idea. You're not going to like this in the end because I know you. But you know how you go to a lot of meeting houses, you might have the display window for a ward behind glass or maybe just a bulletin board.
Yes,
that's very normal across our buildings. Behind their glass, though, they had done very nicely 4 posters that were all cohesive graphically that talked about like ward goals on one. The next one showed when all the ward temple nights were and the dates of ceiling assignments all nicely represented. The ward had its own domain, which I thought was brilliant. I've always thought that would be a great thing to pursue. Yep. They had a .org, and they had emails assigned to it for clerk and bishop and executive secretary. Well, why wouldn't it be? It's not official, but why not do it? That way you have continuity, you know, especially with secretaries and clerks.
Oh, that why is not have genius.
Right? It's inspired me. I'm not a clerk, but I would love to have a domain for our ward. I don't know how much we'd have to pay for hosting just to get some email addresses to do it. But
it's $10 a year, man. That's all it is.
Don't they charge you per email address, though?
No.
After you buy the domain?
What, are you drunk?
You have to host the email somewhere. And I'm not drunk, Al. I believe we know which one of us has been drunk this week.
Let's talk about that on Mailgun or something. It's super simple to build that out.
These are things I don't know. So now I know about Mailgun. That's lovely.
I've learned things. We've done things.
Anyway, Seattle's awesome. Thank you, Pacific Northwest. You rejuvenate me.
Hello, Pacific Northwest. It's me.
You're in LA, though, yes?
I am. I was in San Francisco yesterday, LA today. I'm living the life of a Californian. And it was great.
What does that entail?
What?
I want to know what your version of living the life of a Californian is.
No, I sit in a lot of traffic. I get angry over people burning plastic things. And then I'm very into earthy things. Today I asked for the salmon and said, is it wild salmon? And then I followed it up with, how wild? And this was not an odd question here. This was like expected. And they said, oh, it's line caught, not net caught.
Was this like that episode of Portlandia with the chicken? You ever seen that?
Yeah, I have seen that one. No, but I was out to lunch with these investors, and we're talking about like they're buying their stuff, and he's like, "Oh, I get the salmon. They have great salmon here, and it's the real wild salmon. It makes a difference for the omega-3s because you get threes, and you don't want the sixes as much, but it's a big deal." And I was like, "Oh yeah, he's like, "No," and it. How wild makes a difference? And I was like, how wild is your salmon? And she knew. She was like, oh, it's line caught. This is
where did she say it was? Where was it from, though?
This was one at a time. The river. I didn't get into it.
There's no just some river.
It was Scottish salmon, so it was farmed.
Oh, Al, I think you got lied to then.
No, I'm sure I did.
There's no way. The only fresh salmon you can get in the States that's legit fresh salmon is from Alaska. You can't get Scottish salmon.
No, you can get salmon from Montana, Idaho.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, as far
what
as...
What about
as
Yosemite?
Far as the major, I mean, as far as...
You ever think about that?
Salmon.
You ever think about that,
salmon hatcheries of Yosemite. Yeah. I mean, you know, as far as large-scale fishing.
No, Scottish salmon is obviously just a front for farmed salmon.
It is. No, this is legit. If you go to a restaurant and they tell you the salmon is fresh from the North Sea or the rivers of Scotland and the Highlands and what have you, that means it came from a farm.
Yeah, no, I know this. You lived in Scotland, so that's how you know.
I know everything about Scotland. I can see England, by the way, from Scotland, and I know everything about England accordingly.
Lucky.
No, it was like the time I was in Denmark, and I could see Sweden.
Oh, so did I. So on the flight down, from San Francisco,
did we get to hear the story?
I sit down in my
so
chair, and
this.
I order a ginger ale, and I'm not sure what the drink was that she brought me, but She got through three of us, and then she's like, oh, it's too much. I'm sorry, I can't remember it all. Let me go make these. So she makes them and brings them back out before she got to the rest of the people. And so she brings mine out, and I take, like, ginger ale. So I'm like, gulp, gulp. And then my face was on fire. I would be the worst drinking partner. It was some sort of, like, rum and coke or some, like, very pungent moment of drink. And, dude, like everything in my body went numb. It was the weirdest thing. It was the first time I ever touched this stuff. And I was like, whoa, mama. Whoa, this is the old fire water. It keeps the belly warm. It was pretty intense. I was,
Now you're a big fella, so did you actually feel any kind of a buzz?
No, I'm not going to get...
I wouldn't
no.
think so. I wouldn't think so. Though your texts were just cracking me up when you were sending it to me.
I was like, Jeff, I just drank the liquors.
I was dying.
It's like 1,000 apologies. Like, I can't speak. Ah, I'm drunk. I can't.
I can tell everyone what you said. You said, yeah, you took a gulp of the most wretched concoction that looked just like ginger ale, and then just said, my mouth is on fire. I'm drunk. I need a nap.
Yeah, no. The poor stewardess was just mortified. She was beside herself. I could have been a 10-year-old kid. Then what, Jeff?
Did you show her your temple recommend and be like, this means something to me?
No, I made okay. I showed it to her, made eye contact, and then ripped it in half and said, I hope you're happy. Look what you've done. Look, Michael. Look what you've done to me.
This was a freebie, Al. This was a freebie.
This is... Yeah, no. This is every Mormon's dream. It's like, oh, no.
Absolutely right.
I thought that it was just an off-kilter strawberry cooler. It turns out it was a wine cooler. I didn't know. How could I know? It's such low percentage alcohol.
I thought a virgin pina colada just meant it kept its virtue. You know?
Wait, virgin pina colada is, that's fine to drink.
That's a real thing, but there's no booze in it. You can't, why not? A virgin pina colada is just a pina colada without the tequila put in.
It's ready for virgins. I knew a guy in high school named Virgin. How sad is
Hold
that?
Hold up. There was a guy named Virgin. It wasn't Virgil.
No.
It was Virgin.
No. This was a mother that was like, all right, I got chastity and I got virgin. And I was like,
oh, that's a mother who does not love her children.
No, yeah. She's just calling it how she sees it. She's like, this guy, virgin. And he was on the football team, I think. Or maybe he's just
did he by
gym
chance
class.
Also take photos with a Pikachu? Because, you know, he could.
And the Pikachu was like, virginity, I choose you.
Choose it. Yeah.
The tables were
what a great week. What good times.
Oh, it was delightful. So now I'm in LA and I don't know. It's all work, no play down here. You know how it goes.
Not really. You seem to mix up.
I did go and see the Woody Allen movie last night.
The one that has Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah, it's the Cafe Racer.
Cafe
Society.
Yeah. Yeah. Any good?
No, it was awful.
You have to like Woody Allen.
It's an affair movie.
So I don't know.
It was just an affair movie.
Oh, that sounds like a dream.
Jesse hooks it up with one girl. She goes and like hooks it up with another guy. Jesse goes and hooks it up with another girl. The first girl comes back. It's drama.
This sounds suspiciously like Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
It was just like Cider House Rules.
Oh, that movie's a dream.
That was the worst movie. What are they? The number of atrocities in that movie. There's like rape and incest and abortion and more gratuitous sex. And then the guy didn't get paid a fair wage, if I remember right.
That's the worst.
I was
part
young.
Of it,
I didn't understand all that was happening. But I was like, this guy should join a union and not have to do all this. There's so much going on.
I wanted to call the character Omer Bailey, but I think that was Jake Gyllenhaal in October Sky. So that's a different movie altogether.
I don't.
An uplifting film about coal miners who managed to shoot things up in the sky.
The opposite of incestuous rape and abortion.
October Sky is a delightful film. Everyone should watch it. Highly recommend it. It gets the Twin Seal of approval.
Speaking of which, we had a story. Speaking of rape and abortion,
I don't know if I like where this is going, but okay.
No. There's a story. Lady. There it is. I found it. So a Huffington Post article this week of a lady who was date raped and got pregnant. And then she went to her church.
She's LDS, by the way.
She's not just any lady. This is a Mormon lady, 17 years old, got pregnant, and then worked through a repentance process. Now, in retrospect, she says she, and rightly so, it was not her role to repent. She did nothing wrong.
She was up, but she was denied entry to BYU after that.
She's denied entry to BYU. I think that's more of a part of single with a baby. I wonder if that's a rule. Is that a thing? Do you know?
Yeah, but what if? But she's just pregnant. She could have very well given it up for adoption. I mean, she was pregnant against her will.
Right. Do you know?
And she might have no plans on keeping the baby. So I think this is more BYU just not wanting a unwed pregnant.
Well, or it wasn't BYU at all, and it was the bishop that rescinded the ecclesiastical endorsement. Now here's the thing. Because I don't take this necessarily at face value, because if I'm a bishop and you come and see me and say, hey, I got raped and all this stuff happens, it's actually not a bad place to go to say, hey, let's spend some time in prayer and scriptures, and like you're fine, but like there's going to be some stuff here. Let's let this, you know, like
who's fine?
The person who was raped is not at any fault.
Okay. Oh, so fine, just as far as church discipline
right.
goes. Okay.
But still, sort of take them through a process of you know, a prayer and scripture stuff. You know, some of this, not necessarily repentance, because they're not repenting, but more as a reset button for them. And I could see that being used as a tool. By a bishop, but if a bishop like legitimately back in the old days here of 10 years ago or 20 years ago, like, sent her to repent because she was raped, that's actually pretty bad. So the story goes,
and
the story
that's
goes on.
What
they get,
too,
they get
yeah.
married, and then they were mad, and then they left the church together, she and her husband, and now she's not afraid and sad.
But you are glossing over an important thing where she says she was, instead of trying to get comfort from a bishop, she says the bishop instead prompted her to confess her sins, and the bishop she started meeting with her bishop regularly to repent.
Well, think about that, though, right? If the bishop says, tell me what happened, I mean, you're I mean, there's a chance that, that you're just interpreting that as, well, I had to confess my sins. When you do retell sort of the situation, because it's a bishop's job to judge if you did anything wrong, right? I mean,
that's true, and I agree with you. For all we know, the interpretation of the author is so I could start repenting, and the interpretation of the bishop was so I could counsel with you weekly and make sure you're doing okay. And bear in mind, we don't take any of this lightly. Things like this happen. They happen in the church, but, sadly. People do get raped and assaulted.
I think our takeaway, though, is that anybody that comes into a situation like this, maybe overwhelmed with support and love, and err on the side of you know, just so you know, this is not your fault. I mean, I can't imagine going through something like that and then feeling like or being made to feel like you did something wrong. Even worse, the guy that date raped her, also a Mormon, lived in their ward, couple houses down. People, do not trust people just because they're Mormon. In business, in relationships, in church, do not just trust because they go to the same church as you.
And the other sad thing is that this experience, whatever other doubts she'd already had theologically or what have you, but the experience certainly tainted her view of the church at large. You can kind of tell from reading the account that it's not just say, oh, the guy who drugged me was a Mormon. It's almost more to insinuate, oh, by the way, of course, a Mormon himself was the one to do this. Of course, the bishop was not understanding enough. Of course, the church was bigoted and does not understand things, and I see that now having left it. And obviously, a terrible experience like this would leave one with some salt in the wounds. But you see how much it can taint the entire perspective of things, too. So, and of course, we accept what is written here at face value. We don't know. There are no other details to be had other than from the author. But, be nice to people when bad things happen to them and support them. And this goes back to a lot of the BYU Honor Code stuff that we've talked about for the past few months, right? You know, don't just condemn people right away and assume they did something wrong and assume
we're looking at you, BYU.
Yeah. Al, did you know that a baker from Provo won Cupcake Wars? Great, huge news. That's all I'm going to say about it. Congratulations.
He won it in a video game challenge.
So we've got some interesting things at Sunstone. There was some interesting stuff published about.
I almost went to that. I hear that's a dating hotspot.
Are you going to be going to Education Week this year, Al?
I am.
You usually do. I just assume so.
It's funny because, like, in Utah, as I mentioned that I'm going, a lot of people are like, "Why? It's the worst." I'm like, "Man, I like having a week of just chill out and try and do some study. I like it."
Our buddy, you should do a twin meetup. I know our good buddy Kurt Frankum over at Leading LDS is getting more involved. And I think you two need to at least break bread together, do a photo op or something. You should do a photo op.
Okay.
We need to combine forces here. Especially before he is stronger than us, because he's getting there.
He's a strong man.
He is like a young man who has been at age 11 and 12. Now suddenly he's hitting 13 and 14.
Oh, boy. And it's time for dances soon. It's time for dances.
Yeah. So Jana Reese writes about this, but she was not able to go to this presentation, but found out about it later on. So this is a presentation from Benjamin Knoll, who's a political scientist at Center College, and it's a survey all about, mostly for the most part, doubt. And it's reasonably interesting, actually, and some of the stuff is mixed in with Pew data from 2011. But I love, there's six main takeaways here. And it's kind of interesting. So doubting occurs equally between men and women. Okay. So that getting past all the methodology, this would suggest that women are not inherently more faithful than men. But, you know, I don't know if that's perfect.
Got them.
Interesting one, though. Older Mormons, not younger ones, doubt at higher levels. That's a very interesting one because we always hear about the high attrition rates.
The over 50 crowd gets a 10-point jump.
But you have to remember, those surveyed were members of the church, and so any millennials and, you know, Gen Xers who have already left the church would not have been a part of the survey in the first place.
It's so hard to get good data. So hard.
It really is. Less educated have more doubts. That's okay. That's fine. Democrats are more likely to Democrats doubt more than Republicans do. But independents, especially independents who lean Democratic, are the most likely of all. That's very troubling news for me. I'm concerned for my own salvation.
Okay.
Converts are more likely to doubt than those raised LDS. And I don't like this so much for the proverbial zeal of a convert. Jana Reese herself is a convert, and I know from her writing, she's not just running around drinking the Kool-Aid, as it were. Right? I think it's because converts come from different cultures and backgrounds, and while they might have testimonies, there's so much acculturation that happens in the church that it's natural to perhaps struggle more on that front.
No, sure.
Because you're not raised with it. And then, of course, people who make more than $100,000 a year are more likely to doubt, which I just think is interesting. Basically, the pride cycle right there. If you're wealthy...
Wait, why is that the pride cycle?
I think it's the assumption that you are wealthy and therefore care more about managing your wealth or material possessions and somehow must
doubt. People that are the 1%. Is that what you're trying to say?
$100,000 is not the 1%, but we can pretend it is.
Good. I like pretending.
$100,000 is barely enough to get by nowadays. Barely.
Yeah. I live in L.A., and Jeff, it is so hard.
It's very
so hard here. I live in San Francisco.
It's interesting data, and you can find the full PDF with the article that we'll post on our site for this episode. So it's kind of cool. Some stuff you didn't expect.
Let me throw you one here. The church buys an apartment. News. The church bought an apartment development thing in Dallas, Texas. This is just the real estate arm of the church doing what the real estate arm of the church does. So if you're in Dallas, you can live in a Mormon-owned apartment. Lucky. Lucky.
Boom and shakalaka. Okay. Now let's talk about Gary Johnson.
GJ.
Gary Johnson's been rising in the polls. Everyone's wondering if he can hit 15% in polling so he can be in the debates.
Oh, I love him.
Many things are happening. Now, you still love this man, though, after a bit of a difficult week on the Mormon front. You still love the man?
I love him more.
Now, Al, I believe you are familiar with all that's gone down here, yeah. I believe. Yes?
No, I follow.
Please paint for us a word picture of what happened.
Yeah, so this guy, Gary, his name's Gary Johnson.
Field the Johnson, yes.
He had some comment on religious liberty. It was like, I don't
he think said that, it was a black hole.
It was so. As he explains it later, he was walking. It was in the rain. Some reporter sniped him, and he was like, "Yeah, if you start giving religious liberty, you're in trouble. It's like a black hole." But I don't know. I didn't read it exactly. Do you remember what his quote was that got him in all this trouble?
Basically, he's talking about how it's the federal government's job to prevent discrimination. He talks a lot about how someone's offended you because. This all started with them asking about the Bakers in New Mexico from years ago, right? But he says that he's kind of sideways with the Libertarian Party, but he really believes that religious freedom is, in essence, a black hole because who's to say what the discrimination is? Who's to say anyone with a religious view will not cry foul and say the religious liberty is being infringed when it's just straight-up discrimination? And we've talked about this a lot. Basically, one man's religious liberty is another man's discrimination.
He says certain politicians will twist religious liberty and use it as a tool to discriminate, which is true. We've seen this.
It's absolutely true. So eventually it gets down to a point where he says, back to Mormonism, why shouldn't somebody be able to shoot somebody else because their freedom of religion says that God has spoken to them and that they can shoot somebody dead? And everyone's like, what? He's saying that Mormons want to shoot people dead. That's what we
all,
are. That's
all kinds of hoo-ha.
We are all hoping for. Now, I'm forgetting the name of the book now. Dang it. I'm guessing this is because Gary Johnson wrote, there's a book that was written by, it's by the, the book Into Thin Air? All about climbing Everest?
Yeah, I know that book.
The same author wrote a book, and I'm totally blanking on the title right now, that dealt in some aspects of Mormonism. And long story short, basically there's a part in there where it sort of insinuates exactly what Gary Johnson said. So it almost makes it seem like his main exposure to Mormonism was John Krakauer basically wrote a book, I believe, about, about the Mountain Meadows Massacre, but Under the Banner of Heaven. Investigative nonfiction book all about the origin of the church. But John Krakauer is not really a friend to the church in that sense. And so we can surmise that Gary Johnson has read this book, and that might be why he said what he said and the way he said it. But as Al is going to explain, he did walk it back. He did walk it back.
Oh, he walked it back like a pro. Because his response was just like, hey, guys, listen. You Mormons have faced a lot of hard stuff, and you guys are good people. What I was talking about, and I can totally appreciate his stance on this, was the you know, as you give religious freedom, as you give exceptions to religious organizations, that also has to apply to everyone else, right? And so he's just like what I can appreciate, he's just trying to walk through how to not discriminate but still give protections to religions. So in short, does he hate religious freedom? I don't believe he does.
No.
In fact, he says he does not.
And he was just talking about how the Mormons were attacked because of religious, what people
interpreted as religious freedom. And I quote, "I want to be clear. I believe we can and must strike a balance between our shared American values of religious liberty and freedom from discrimination. My concerns lie with the possible consequences of politically driven legislation which claims to promote religious liberty but instead rolls back the legal protections held by LGBT Americans." We agree with this, right? We've long held that child pornography bills and stuff are the way that people pass sweeping internet legislation that actually harms overall. They just put it under the wrong name. And so being a little wary of religious freedom as a whole, I am okay with, right? Like let's be strategic here, people. That's what we're saying.
Ah, but see, if you're strategic with religious freedom, doesn't that sort of dilute the whole point of it? Religious freedom is selective, is what you're saying?
Yeah, that's
what I'm
saying.
We selectively apply religious freedom?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then how is that freedom if it is selectively applied, if it is curtailed by something else?
No, I'm selectively building our legislation that's going to limit or protect religious freedom and the LGBT-style discrimination stuff.
All right. Fair enough. And Johnson even mentions the Utah Compact that was behind a lot of that, right? And also, bear in mind, his campaign's headquartered in Salt Lake City, so I think he knows the Mormons a little bit.
No, he does. In fact, I have a buddy that made his video, who's a lovely Mormon fellow, who it was fun to catch up. He said he really liked old Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson does need more money to step up his media stuff. He's got bad memes on Facebook, and just he needs to kind of...
It's all genitalia memes and stuff. He loves the left nut, right nut Johnson jokes.
Yeah, it's all pretty sad. He needs to get with some higher quality stuff, but he can only do that if he gets money to do it. So,
hey, that's the way it goes. Hey, I had a great chat with a buddy on Sunday. I'm trying to remember. It was all on the... It was a buddy of mine, Bookstore Brian, I call him. We should have him on the show one time.
I know Bookstore Brian.
Yeah.
We've talked for years about doing things with Bookstore Brian.
He's great, man. But so he owns this bookstore, this rare books shop, and apparently there was a Paul H. Dunn book that came out recently that I really want to read.
Oh boy,
which is all just like, it's such an interesting sort of thing to think through in terms of you know, you've got this guy that's clearly making up stories as he goes because he likes to tell good stories. He's a great storyteller, but he's making them up for the faith and good stuff. And so in the end, like, he gets reprimanded and has to apologize and dies as an emeritus instead of in full active duty. It was a great conversation just around, like, how far do you let a guy go? Because how do you reprimand somebody if you're, so like, if you're a stake president, you're just making up stories.
Yeah.
You know, you don't find people. Well, I mean, how do you, if you're over him, how do you say like, hey, president, quit doing that. Quit doing that stuff.
I think that's what you have to, that's a good point. It's not a sin per se, but you are lying. You are leading people down a certain path based on falsehoods, but falsehoods that are meant for the good, right? That's where it gets complicated.
Well, there's even examples of like modern day apostles that have done something not to the extent of Paul H. Dunn, but like a story that they quote out of a spot and it's embellished, and you're like, all right, that quote, I just looked up that quote and that's not what it says. You know, like, what do you do with that guy? It's not like they're not malicious by any means. They're just trying to tell a good story.
I feel you. That's actually a good segue, Al, into something I would love to get into.
Take us there.
Our fine friend, Korihor. Korihor has been on my mind of late, and it's been very interesting, the things that have sort of fallen in front of my view on this same front. Now,
Korihor.
Now, most of this started, I had not been thinking about Korihor really much before Sunday. And so in the ward I attended...
Which is fair. He doesn't come up in casual conversation very often.
In the ward I attended... They were still on the they were on Alma 30 in Gospel Doctrine. A few lessons behind where I assumed they would be. We talked a lot about Korihor, but really this was because the teacher's choice, and I'm not going to defend the teacher's methods or focus at all, but the teacher focused a lot on sort of the catch-22 there as far as religious freedom and how it is with Korihor. Now, if you don't know the story, and I probably won't tell it well enough, Korihor was a Nephite, and he was walking to and fro preaching falsehoods. But Mormon, in his compendium of the Book of Mormon, goes to great lengths in the beginning of the chapter to explain that there was no law against a man's belief, in verses 7 through 11, that men were free to serve God, free to choose not to serve God. You were only punished if you actually, you know, murdered people, robbed people, et cetera, right?
As you should be.
You were punished for those crimes, but there was no law to punish him. It says this very clearly. Mormon goes out of his way to describe this, which is very interesting. It's probably the biggest, the most explicit passage about religious freedom in the Book of Mormon, I would say. Those five verses. Now, what's very interesting is as we go on, what happens to Korihor, Al? I mean, does Korihor kill anybody? Does he commit whoredoms?
Well, no, Jeff. No, he doesn't.
Korihor,
he preaches against the good word.
He goes to the land of Jershon, to the Lamanites. My understanding is they just kind of drive him out. They just kind of tie him up and get rid of him, right? And then he goes to the land of Gideon, where he is brought before the judge. And eventually this goes all the way back to Zarahemla, to the chief judge. You got Alma. Things are going down. And Korihor is sort of tried, and it's always been very confusing for me. Even to this day, I read this passage, and I try to figure out, why does it lead off talking about religious freedom, Korihor's freedom to say as he wants, and then somehow they are trying the man, when I've never found a perfect answer for this, and there's a lot we don't know, right? There's a lot of blank spaces we could fill in with all sorts of conjecture in this case. We don't know the full extent of the Nephites' political system. We don't know if the anti-Nephite Lehis had a different thing going on.
Oh, enough with it. What are you getting at?
What are you getting at? The point is, what does this mean for, we're talking about religious freedom. We're talking about this. There's an author here.
Are you concerned that that Mormon didn't really see the religious freedom piece the way that we think he should have?
No, not much.
He kind of was like, yeah, I mean, you got to take care of this guy that's getting a little crazy. Do something with it.
Well, I want to look more at the other side of it. Now, I think perhaps Korihor was actually doing as much as leading people astray, leading people into dangerous living that was against the law. And in that sense, he was a public concern. That's what I imagine was going down. But at the same time, let's flip it around. What about the Nephites during this time? Why were the Nephites so susceptible to Korihor? Why were they swayed by this man? What does it say about them?
What are you talking about?
Well, think about it. I'm not saying it's their fault, but or is it their fault? And because we have another piece this week from good old Kirby over at the Tribune, effectively saying Mormons don't always, who's responsible at the end of the day for your own salvation? And I don't agree with everything in it by any means.
Meaning he made some comments at Sunday school, and a lady said, "Hey, you're leading the people astray," and he was like, "Whatever," which. It's fine, right? Like, I mean, there's promoting faith, and then there's trying to tear faith down, because there are. So sort of the question is: are there like magic questions that nobody's allowed to ask that might tear faith down, and should you avoid that any of that kind of rhetoric? Which clearly is no, right? If you're not able to think through or have a cognizant dialogue about your beliefs or muse on questions that maybe you don't know the answer to but would like to. You're going to have a hard time with any religion that's based on faith. And there's some of that, but what we were doing with Korihor, though.
It's a little bit of both. That's what it made me think of all these things together. It's like, here's an article from Kirby that's basically saying, I might do what I do, but you're responsible for yourself. Which in the end is true, but we have an example of Korihor, who was clearly responsible for leading others.
Well, we have examples of a lot of people that try and tear down faith, and
we have recent history with that, where people have clearly actively led.
Well, it's like having a kid in your teenager circle of friends that's trying to get everybody to smoke weed. I mean, it's you don't keep them around because they're they're nice folk. I mean, like, you don't want to be around that stuff because it's bad. It's a bad influence on, like, it's distracting, whatever it is.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, like, I don't know, if you're questioning doctrine in church, you're allowed to have, like, positive, supportive questions where you're trying to find an answer, not just trying to tear people down. And maybe that's the difference, right?
And that might be it. So, anyway, all these things sort of came together at once. This lesson happened, then there was this by common consent article about Korihor and freedom of religion, and then the Kirby article.
What was interesting to you? What was your takeaway?
Well, the by common consent article is very interesting because it talks about Mormon as an unreliable narrator, which is another very interesting place to take the Book of Mormon if you study it strictly historically in that sense, that the Mormon's view was skewed from being many, many years removed from the action and wanted to embellish where he needed to embellish, which is fine. That's one of its main points there. But my main takeaway is that we talk about freedom of religion all the time in the church. And like you said, though, Al, where do we have to draw a line on freedom of religion? For all we know, Korihor was doing worse. But as far as we know from the account, from all it said, all we know is he just preached stuff that was wrong and was then condemned.
What it is interesting, the reaction was like, they you know, bind him up and take him to the high priest. And I was like, dude, I got nothing. This guy, he's doing his thing. And then they battle.
And then they battle, and Korihor wants a sign, and all that stuff happens. I'd really like to open that up though to our users, because the whole Korihor episode's always been very interesting to me, and I've never fully settled on it in my mind. Just as far as the way it's set up, and then what happens, it's a very interesting way the chapter is written. And then likewise, the Nephites themselves, were they not responsible? Terrible.
Are ye not entertained?
I am.
All right, let me give you a few mentions. There's a guy that died in the Nutty Putty caves. I didn't know. The only Nutty Putty I knew was the thing that you use to, like, clear your sinuses.
Yeah.
Isn't that a Nutty Putty?
It's called a Neti pot.
A Nutty Putty pot.
I think of a Nutter Butter, though.
Oh, Nutter Butters are good, too. So this guy goes into the Nutty Putty caves, which is a terrible name for caves that you go and die in. But he died, and there's a movie made about him that's apparently very positive. He hung upside down for 28 hours.
That sucks.
It's no 72 hours. It's only 28 hours, but still very
upside very down. Yeah, but then he slipped back in, and
I don't know what that. That'd be a terrible way to die.
And then they filled in the caves. They never got his body out. It was very sad, and they closed off the caves.
Why do you fill the cave? Why don't I just put a grate over it? Anyway,
I don't know. The point is, there's a movie about it that's supposed to deal with the hope that can still be found, I think is the point of it. Even though the guy dies.
All right, if I'm imagining an 18-inch crevice that you've slipped down in and continued to fall deeper in, that's actually very sad and very, very scary to me. Never mind.
Very claustrophobic.
Let's see. The Planned Parenthood, they had that CTR condom.
Oh, my gosh.
The church did not appreciate the gesture. They didn't find the humor in it, as they rarely do when it comes to trademark infringement. They're not very funny with that.
Sort of mocking the general intent of CTR.
Choose the right when a choice is placed before you.
Now, this really was kind of this was a big hoopla over the weekend, or a little bit before last weekend, right? I saw this, and I mean, you can see some of the ridiculous humor in it, but I completely get why the church was just not pleased.
So was this Kate Kelly's jam, Jeff?
That is the question.
Did she make this happen?
Our dear listeners might remember that a year or so ago, Kate Kelly rose to a prominent position in Utah's Planned Parenthood. So one has to wonder if she had any role in this. I have absolutely nothing to substantiate that. This is just rumor mongering. That's all it is.
This is all conjecture.
But I don't know. You got to wonder. I get that. And of course, Planned Parenthood tried to walk it back by saying, well, you know, it's about reminding people to do safe things, you know, to spark open and honest conversations about sexual health and contraception.
Like, hey, shut up.
Well, yeah. They were going to pass them out at Sunstone over this past weekend.
Hey, so here's one that I would like to talk about. The church, this is over on LDS.net. Should the church have a stance on genetically modified people?
Like Gattaca?
Like as we continue to map the genome and learn how to adjust and things, is it morally reprehensible to fix a disease in an unborn baby? Like, let's say you have a baby that's going to be born with autism, and you can fix it.
Oh.
Is there anything from a religious standpoint that would say, this feels very Jehovah's Witness all of a sudden as I'm saying this, the idea of not using science to improve your quality of life. But like, let's say you can make a kid smarter or more athletic or whatever by changing his DNA. Should you just leave it up to my life is a gift, my life has a plan, my life has a purpose, in heaven it began, sort of, this is who I am, and this is what I'm supposed to be. Jeff, if you could go and have some sort of a surgery or something that would make you smarter, there's nothing morally wrong with doing that, is there?
That's the question. And this article at LDS.net cites a study by Pew that showed that more religious people are also more likely to view this sort of stuff as inappropriate, meddling with nature, playing God, right? I would assume it would be a good thing to do. And there's a good quote here, though. There's a difference. They're talking about abortion. But there's a difference between taking the life of an unborn child who might suffer lifelong illness and referencing some of the caveats on abortion, you know, rape, incest, danger of the life of the mother or the child that we talk about. There's a difference between that and giving the life, child a life free from disease. Like, if we can cure diseases, of course we want to do it, especially if you do believe that life starts before birth, you know, at some point in utero. Does that not mean that that life is also stands to benefit from this, from medical benefits, like it would once it's outside of the womb? If you know that a kid has Down syndrome, but you can cure it while it's growing, would you not
now,
do that?
Now, what if the kid was just a little dumber?
I think that's where it gets interesting. If we can,
what if he just wasn't as like, because ideally there's like an optimum athletic balance of genes, right? Like you're gonna make a kid optimally physically fit or yeah, optimally intellectual, right? You're gonna give them all the tools they have to be on a level playing field to have everything that everyone else has. So in that case, should you do that? Is that the right thing to do?
I don't know, because that's when it becomes like boutique shopping.
I'm very torn
for what your kids can have. And I mentioned Gattaca when you started this. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
You would enjoy it. It deals with many of these issues. It takes place in a future where we can do this, like kids to order. You might get pregnant, but then you
genetically modify. I saw an Arnold Schwarzenegger one where he like cloned a dog and then they cloned a human and then there was a bunch of Arnolds.
No, you're thinking of when Arnold gets pregnant. That's Junior.
Oh, I love that movie. Twins? Great, so great.
Twins is not as good as Junior.
No, what are you talking? Twins is better than Junior.
Okay, I tried watching Twins a little while ago, and I couldn't even. It was, I don't know, I was upset. But anyway, you should watch Gattaca. It deals with this, where it's a future where people can just pick and choose, so everybody is perfect, and there are those who are not, who are conceived and born naturally, and they are at a disadvantage in society.
Gene editing, brain chip implants, synthetic blood transfusions. What is too far?
Soon we become cyborgs. I don't know. It's like, obviously, we are eternal. We're made in the likeness of our Father in heaven. But who says say that Heavenly Father did not bless mankind with the ingenuity to perfect his children?
I'll be honest, if I found out that my mom could have made me smarter by like letting them adjust some gene, I'm like, why would you not do that? That would have been so cool.
But if you were different, you might not be the person you are today. You might not be a cool
I would be
mogul.
Smarter than I am today. Anyway.
I mean, yeah, I would have loved to have broader shoulders, right? Have you seen these things? You can't even put a like a bowl on these things. It's not even wide enough.
I'm sorry, you're putting bowls on your shoulders?
I'm just giving an example of the average width of an object and what could fit.
Like, how are you measuring your shoulders?
If I were to try to wear suspenders, they would just fall off. There's nowhere to put them.
You're saying you're hoping Guy Mathias has your wife's shoulders and not yours.
Her side of the family has some burlier people, so that wouldn't be the worst thing.
Okay, good.
Though it would also result in a lot of body hair, so trade-offs.
It's a toss-up at that point.
That's, you know, the Italians and everything. So
I love these kind of questions, though, the ones that are that sort of say, all right, we believe that, you know, if we believe gender is eternal, and do we believe intelligence is eternal? Do we believe that that body shape or bone structure is eternal?
Yeah. But then we're perfected later on. Body shape and different structures will be different when we are resurrected in our perfected state.
Man. Lots so, there.
So is that, oh, so maybe it's really that we are striving to achieve our resurrected state while still mortal.
While still in the womb.
Maybe we're still achieving physical perfection.
Aha. Level. All right.
This gets crazy. We're done with this. Some quick news here, folks. The volunteers, as we say,
missionaries
in Turkey are also known as volunteers. They have been ever since the Central Eurasian mission was started.
Turns out, as a coup and imprisonment of innocent people is being rampant in Turkey, they find it unsafe for missionary work.
Yeah. So they've moved them to Germany. Germany has a very large Turkish population, about 4 to 5 million Turkish people in Germany. So they're going to work there. And then when the situation calms down in Turkey, they're going to bring them back. So this is not, it's just a safety precaution more than anything else. It's not necessarily a political message. It's not dealing with something like Russia's law.
I think it is political. I don't think that, no. No, this is definitely saying, hey, dude.
Well, it's saying it's a politically uneasy time. And so it's for the safety of all involved to get out of Dodge for a little while. But they're saying they can put them back. This is not like Russia where everything is changing.
Disagree. Let's see. So there was a Filipino family that had, they just sent their 13th kid on a mission. Way to go. 13. Woo. That's a lot of kids. It's a lot of mission.
That's a lot of kids.
At some point, you know, this 13th kid, he's for sure, he's just like, he doesn't have a single new thing. He's got a hand-me-down suit, hand-me-down shirts, hand-me-down shoes. His mom's just like, take a box of Oreos. I'm not sending you anything in the MTC, you schmo. Let's see. Stephanie Myers has a new book. Vampires and something, I'm sure.
No, it's not. It's about something else.
What? Harry Potter?
I wish. It's called The Chemist. It'll be about an ex-agent on the run.
Oh, a Zagent. You read that wrong. It's Zagent.
An ex-agent on the
Zagent,
run. I'm pretty sure I saw that movie. That movie was, let's see, didn't they already do that? Let's see, Bourne, Salt.
Have you seen the new Bourne movie?
I have not. Did you see it?
No, I'm waiting to see it with you.
You say that a lot, and then that doesn't happen.
Also, there was a Swedish member of the 70, Elder Malm, passed away this week, which is no good, but...
battle with cancer.
He's Swedish. Good for him.
Sad, though. Very sad. Yeah. And some quick temple news. Over at our Facebook page, you can see a great video tour of the Philadelphia Temple, whose open house has now started.
So here it's lovely.
If you're on the Eastern Seaboard, if you're anywhere between D.C. and New York's easy, you could even say D.C. and maybe Boston if you're
feeling saucy. Ride the train, I see.
Take the train on down, go to Philadelphia. Actually, that's the beauty. You could take the train. Take the train right to Philadelphia, take SEPTA, boom, Logan Square, you're in.
Take an Uber?
Yeah. So it's going on. The open house is happening. I really love that at philly.com, which has covered the temple construction pretty extensively, their author, Inga Saffron.
What a great name.
Inga Saffron. Really gets into some of the architectural ins and outs of the temple. Like really going specific about all how it's built, how it's made of better stuff than other people who try to build knockoff colonial-looking things. She has some criticisms, though, which are just architecturally speaking.
What does she not like?
One of them, she does not like the meeting house that's across the street. Basically, the temple is grand. She might just not get what we go for
the
as
red
Mormons.
Brick?
Yeah, the temple is amazing and meticulously done. But the meeting house is a red brick meeting house that, as she says, looks like a squashed cupcake with a giant candle stuck on top.
Whoa.
And then also most baffling is the presence of a drainage basin on Vine Street, which separates the two. And so you have to, like, pass the drainage basin whenever you have to.
What is the drainage basin?
I don't know. I'll be there in a couple of weeks. I'll look for it.
Okay.
Anyway, so she feels like also that we're not great at replicating traditional urbanism, which is, I mean, fine, but we're not
when
trying to
when you're doing
make
a temple, you're kind of trying to not fit in.
And there's a lot of comparisons to the Catholic Basilica that's on Logan Square as well, of St. Peter's.
I like her. Church officials won't say how much it costs, but based on comparable projects, it couldn't have been less than $100
million. Do you agree with that assessment, though?
I don't know.
In your experience building warehouses, is this a fair number?
Well, let's see, a warehouse and a couple million. Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, good. That was your TWIM analysis, folks. Yeah, so I'm stoked to go to Philly. I think I'm going to be up there in a couple of weeks, so I will report. We will check it out.
I can't wait. What if it's beautiful?
I'm going to get special permission to go Facebook Live while we're on the tour on the inside.
Just sneak it in.
They're going to be okay.
I'll give you hearts. It'll be great.
I haven't been through a temple open house since the smartphone era kicked off. So I'm curious. I'm assuming people will be nice and they'll just say, please, no pictures. And the groups are small enough they can keep track of it. But
that is what they say.
But I've never, for all I know, they take them away. You know.
Also, there's a partial closure of the Draper Temple.
Which part, Al?
I believe they're closing the celestial room, Jeff. You'll just go through and then get it back.
Are they
to the
saying
locker.
All the saints in Draper are so wicked they do not get to progress? They just have
They're
to
like,
stop.
Listen, you guys can do everything but baptisms.
Here's the thing with the Draper Temple. I've been there. It's a beautiful temple. But of a lot of the temples we've built of late, some of the visualization, the visuals in the area are a little bit unnerving, namely that the Draper Temple sits on a hill with McMansions surrounding it and then other McMansions above it on the hill looking down on it. So the temple is not the highest thing, where instead you
have the worst.
Cheap McMansions looking down at the house. Which isn't the worst thing in the world, but it's kind of weird compared to some other settings. Like Bountiful doesn't have anything looking down at it. It's on the highest point in this tent.
Yeah,
city.
Thank you. Good job, Bountiful.
They could have put it up on Traverse Ridge. I don't know why they didn't. Come on, people.
They should have.
Anyway.
Drive us up to the
temple. Tell me more about the Draper Temple. What's happening?
That's it. They're just closing down for a couple of days a week while they fix some condensation issues with the AC. No big deal.
And now Jordan River's also closed. So this means the poor people have to go either to Mount Tippinogus or Ochre, right?
Or Salt Lake. They can go right to Salt Lake.
Could do that, too. If you don't know who Darius Gray is, just go and read this great bio of him over
Hold
at Disney.
Hold my hand.
That's Darius Rucker, but very close.
Oh, that's right.
Very, very close. I've made the same mistake. I met Darius Gray
I'm
going to
love
once.
You the best that I can.
Should we arrange a meetup where that's what you say to him when you walk up to him?
Stand there and circle him.
Just stand there and squeal and just go, Hootie! Darius Gray is a pioneer in African-American issues in the church. He was once president of the Genesis Group. He served on the presidency of the Genesis Group when it was first created. He worked with church leaders in the 70s on doing outreach with Africans in Africa. And he was blown away by this, that we even had members in Africa when there was no priesthood at the time. He has a long and storied history in the church. And Deseret News decided to basically do a big profile of him in their faith section. And it's a very worthwhile read. If you've never heard of him, he's a famous man within Mormonism. He's done a lot of good, been very, very heavily involved in a number of things. Namely, he was involved in the priesthood ban being lifted. He was part of all
really?
Of that. I mean, he's not the one receiving revelation or anything, obviously, but he had a relationship.
Spencer, come here.
He had a relationship with officials, and they were aware of things. So give that a read. It's a good bio on a man, a big part of history. There we go.
Very nice. All right. Well, as always, people, you can find us at thisweekinmormons.com or email us contact at thisweekinmormons. We will read your mails and do whatever we do with them.
As I always do, I encourage you to listen to Sunday School Bonanza, our gospel doctrine prep podcast. It'll make you better for Sunday. You'll go to Gospel Doctrine and have things to say.
It really will. It's going to be nice.
We've had rave reviews. People send in emails, or at least they used to. They don't do it anymore, which now has me questioning the quality of the whole thing.
Everything's gone down.
No, but I think it's still okay. Look out for that. Look out for Third Hour of Power. Does the same thing for the gospel, for the Presidents of the Church manual. And, of course, find us on social media, everybody. We're everywhere. You can find us on all the major outlets. So just look.
We're there.
Just look for it. And we'll be there. We'll interact with you and make you happy.
Jeff, I have 1,000 loves for you. Many smiles.
And
many
I, smiles. To thee, do have love. Have a great LA experience, Al. I hope it's just super.
It's gonna be the best.
What you should do is take the subway down and take the new Expo line all the way to Santa Monica.
I only ride the subway when I'm in LA.
Really?
I didn't know they had one.
Yeah, they do. It's most all right, man. Know. Unless you see the movie Volcano. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week. Thanks for listening to TWIM. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.